Continue our study in the book of James, James chapter 1. Last week we went through the first four verses of the book of James, and we noted that this is a letter written by James, the brother of Jesus, and it is not a bunch of proverbs, but there are a lot of short individual sayings, but these things are interrelated, and verses 5 through 8 here that we want to look at this evening, it shouldn't be removed from the context of trials that, as was mentioned in Jason's prayer tonight, James talks a lot about trials, as we talked last week in the first four verses. And so I think these things follow up verses 1 through 4 when we look at verses 5 through 8. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in his ways. So when he says here, any of you lacks wisdom, he's moving forward in this discussion, but it's really talking in the context here of trials. Trials are something that produce steadfastness, and we need to let steadfastness have its perfect work, and we need to prevail through a trial and not fail so that we will lack nothing and we become complete. As we mentioned this morning, you know, one trial doesn't make you complete or perfect, and we need to keep responding in the right way so that we can become more spiritually mature. So this thought process that James is making here is pretty natural in that you would want wisdom in the face of trials. In fact, I think most of us probably pray for wisdom when we do undergo trials because we want to respond to those things correctly. We want direction and guidance. We want that from God. And a lot of times we seek that out from others that we know may have gone through things, and we want their direction and guidance to help us be what we should be as Christians. So in the process of becoming more mature, these are things that we work through. And when James tells us to ask God here, this is certainly very important when he says in verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God. And that's certainly something that you need in the midst of a trial. And this instruction to ask God is pretty obvious that we should do that. But how often is it that we ask everybody else, you know, before God? That we may seek help from any other source when we really should be praying, or we ought to be looking into God's Word for help on how to do things. So many times we don't look to the Scriptures as we should with the proper direction on how to go. And how many times do we cry out either verbally or in our mind that we need wisdom? And he's telling us you need to ask for that. And prayer does not need to take a back seat in trials and become the option of last resort that a lot of people take. And many people don't think to pray until they are at their wits' end. Rather than going immediately to God, they go to all other sorts of places and self-help books and those kind of things, where they go to God, don't go to God, but they go to friends. So go to God is James' admonition here, because wisdom comes from God. And he's going to tell us that again other times in the book as well, when he says in James chapter 3, verse 17, wisdom comes from above, and it comes from God. So that's where you really should start with. Pray to God for help. Pray to God for wisdom. Read his word and learn his ways and apply that, you know, to your life. So what happens when you ask God for wisdom? Well, James says he gives it to you. In fact, he says he gives it to you generously or liberally. And the word that's translated generously here, it's an interesting word. It means without reservation. It means without having second thoughts. or wholeheartedly. So this is telling us that God's intent is to give you that wisdom when you ask for it without reservation, and that he's not going to hold back. So he also says here who he gives it to. He's going to give it to some of you. No, he says he's going to give it to all. He's going to give it to all who ask. So God is not going to withhold wisdom from you and give it to me, or not give it to me and give it to you. God is going to give that to us. That's his character. So God will hear your request. He'll give you wisdom without reproach. Reproach is not a word that we use a whole lot in our daily language. Probably it's within these four walls that we usually use that word. But the idea is that God is not going to find fault with that request. That we're not irritating God by asking for wisdom. So there's no need to be ashamed to ask for it. But we're also told how to ask, and we're told to ask in faith. So it's not just enough to ask for it, but to ask in faith. And so what does that mean, to ask in faith? Well, it's contrasted here with asking in doubt. So that helps you define what that means, that you ask in faith with no doubting. So does that mean that, well, maybe I'm having problems with doubt? Maybe that's one of the reasons I'm asking for wisdom, is how to deal with doubt. So does that cancel each other out? I don't think that's what God is saying here, that a Christian is never going to have doubts, and so if you have doubts, you can't pray. No, not that you have this impervious faith that's never shaken. But I believe that the doubting here that James has in view is the doubting of God's character to fulfill what it is that you're wanting, or you've got a wavering commitment to God, that you're not settled in your ways. That if you're one that is not really depending on God, or doubt that God's going to keep his word or keep his promise, that's not good. So you can't ask God for wisdom doubting whether or not God's going to keep up his end of the bargain. And so you observe here what James says. Let him ask in faith with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. So you get the idea that this is not a stable person. And I think we can see the type of commitment that we want when we look at the life of Abraham. That's a life that we see is, well, Paul made reference to it in Romans chapter 4 and verse 20. He said, no unbelief made him waver concerning the promise of God. And there were a lot of things that God promised to Abraham, some of which didn't make sense. There were things that God asked Abraham to do that didn't make sense, like offering his son Isaac and promising a son in he and his wife's old age, and going to a land that God would show him. But Paul says that Abraham did these things in faith without wavering, fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. And so there's the kind of faith that you ought to have in reference to what James is saying. When you ask for wisdom, have the same kind of faith that Abraham did, that you believe that God's able to deliver what it is that he said he would do, that God is able to promise what it is that he said that he would deliver. So asking in faith is truly being convinced that God can do that. And in particular here, James is driving at this asking in faith for wisdom, fully convinced that God will give you wisdom, just like he said. So, this ought to be an obvious fact to us. We might illustrate it this way. Rex, why don't you kids ask you for a Ferrari for their birthday? Why would they ask that? Well, there's not a chance that that's going to happen, right? Unless it's a Matchbox car, and that's a funny joke, right? You give them the Ferrari, it's about this big, and may not even get that. But the thing is that you have no expectation that Rex is going to fulfill that. even if he was able to fulfill it, he probably still would do it. He'd find something else to do with that money. So the reason that you would not ask Rex for a Ferrari for your birthday is because it's a total waste of time. That's not true with God. Not that God's going to give you a Ferrari for your birthday, but when you ask for wisdom, God is fully capable to do that. And so you ask in faith, because if you don't believe that God can accomplish what he has promised, then why ask? And that's what James is getting at here. You don't ask for wisdom and waver on whether or not God is able to deliver that promise. He certainly can't. So what is the point of asking without having that faith? If you don't believe God can accomplish what he promised, then why ask? And so why asking without faith fails? Well, James tells us that. He says it's like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. Well, that's unstable, isn't it? There's probably not a lot of things I can think of that you feel more out of control is if you're on a boat and you have no control over where it's going. And you can't change anything. You just hope that the storm is going to pass. And that kind of person that wavers it like that boat that's tossed and driven by the wind, a person that has a faith like that doesn't believe that God keeps his word. He doesn't have any anchor in his life. He doesn't have anything to put his or her hope on. So that person is, well, I think I'll just go ahead and pray just in case. Yeah, is that the way that we're to pray, that it's half-hearted with no real hope or expectation that God is going to do anything? Without that anchor, then you're going to be destroyed. James also describes this as a double-minded person. And this is a picture of somebody whose loyalties are divided. The double-minded person is the one that looks to God, and he looks to himself. And hoping that maybe one of those two options will be helpful. But the double-minded person is trying to serve two masters, and this is a problem that Jesus warned against, and Jesus said you can't do that, that no man can serve two masters. And this is one of the things that James is getting at here. This double-minded person relies on themselves when things are going good and quickly turns to God when things are going bad. And that person's loyalties are divided, their commitment wavers, and James is saying that is a problem. Are you relying on yourself or are you relying on God? If you're relying on yourself, then you're unstable. And your life is going to be unstable whenever the waves are tossing you to and fro. And so James actually says those very words, the double-minded person is unstable in all their ways. So you have to ask yourself, do you find your life to be unstable? Do you feel like you're being tossed and driven to and fro by life? Does your life lack stability? Well, many times when we see somebody's life lacking stability, it comes from a lack of trust or commitment in God. And that's what James may have put his finger on something here. The reason that your life is unstable is because your loyalties are divided. And your interests are divided. That God is not your anchor in life, and that's why things seem to go awry. You're divided between relying on God and relying on yourself. Sometimes you turn to God, sometimes you turn to yourself. And that causes all sorts of problems. And James says, this person must not suppose that they will receive anything from God. And we don't want to be that person. We don't want to be the person who's half-heartedly praying, and what James says, don't be surprised if it has no effect. That person should not suppose that they would receive anything. God's not going to answer your request for wisdom if you don't pray with faith, believing, or don't have an and you have a divided loyalty, why would we think God would answer if we have a divided loyalty? But the good thing is that God wants to give us wisdom generously, and we need to do that. So in conclusion of this section, don't get excited, it's not over yet, but in conclusion to this section, we see that we go to God in trials. And why would you go anywhere else? Why would you rely on anyone else? Why would you rely on yourself when you know that you don't know what to do? You don't know where to go, and you have no control over the situation. You go to God. So you go to God in trials. You ask God for wisdom. People cry out many times when they suffer. But we neglect to ask for the most important thing that God has said that He will give us. He says He'll give it without reservation. That's wisdom. So ask God for wisdom and know that God will help. God will help by giving us wisdom without reproach, without hesitation, generously, so you don't go away empty-handed when you go to God asking for wisdom, and not be double-minded. God is going to see if we have a divided loyalty. We don't need to wonder whether or not God is going to keep His word. We ask in faith without wavering because we know God keeps His word. So go to God in trials, ask for wisdom, know that God will help, and don't be double-minded. So the next section of verses we have here is verses 9 through 12. Verses 9 through 12. Let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation, and to the rich in his humiliation, because like a flower of the grass, he will pass away. For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass. The flower falls, and its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love Him. So, keeping on this theme of suffering, pretty often people will look at the rich when they're suffering and think, well, you know, they don't have any troubles. And, you know, a saying of somebody that I used to work with at EBSCO, somebody asked him how they're doing, and he would always say, I don't have any problems $1 million wouldn't fix. And you've probably heard people say that before. And, you know, people laugh when they hear that and think, yeah, that's probably true. But people that don't have $1 million look at that statement and think, yeah, that if I just had that, it would fix everything. We see ourselves suffering, and we see, you know, the rich, you know, being completely untouched by suffering and trials. And probably this point of view is one reason why the health and wealth preaching that takes place today is successful. And people think that if they have riches, they won't have problems. And we even have a song that echoes these sentiments in our psalm books, Farther Along. Tempted and tried, we're oft made to wonder why it should be thus all the day long. While there are others living about us, never molested, though in the wrong. So we're viewing those others as not having problems. Here we have all these problems, but here's all the ones that we perceive as not having problems. When death has taken our loved ones, leaving our home so lonely and drear, then do we wonder why others prosper, living so wicked year after year. And I'm not really trying to be real critical of that song if it's a song that you like, but it does kind of speak to this attitude that, you know, woe is me, somebody else that has it better than me, and maybe one day I'll understand it in the by and by. And so it's this attitude that sometimes we have. And then another, you know, verse that that I have heard is in the songbook, and I haven't verified this, but somebody told me that there's another verse that's not in our songbook that goes this way. Tempted and tried, how often we question why we must suffer year after year, being accused by those of our loved ones, even though we've walked in God's holy fear. And so it just goes along with the same theme of this attitude, that we look at what somebody else has and think that it is that they're in a better situation. And so James says, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation and the rich in his humiliation. And then it goes on to talk about how the rich really isn't that rich, and how the rich are not as well off as you think that they are, because the lowly one or the poor one is the one that is exalted. So, you know, this goes on here in verse 12, and it says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trials, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life. So this continues here with this discussion of trials. So we need to keep all this in the same context of trials. And so this is not just some random teaching about the poor and the rich, but the problem that you face in trials. So you observe the rich doing well while we suffer. And the rich here seems to be in the context of the worldly rich, because you see the condemnation of the rich. This is not talking about those that are spiritual that have money. This is talking about the one that trust in their riches, that they boast in that, because you see the example here. The lowly one boasts in his exaltation, the rich in his humiliation. Well, the rich is not usually humiliated. This is saying that the rich, the tables are turned on the rich. And so you don't look at them and think that they have it better. Let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation. The lowly brother appears to be a reference to the Christian who is being crushed by trials. He's weak and from despair, from the suffering he's enduring. And it contrasts here, you know, the wealth when he talks about the rich. So the lowly brother is not certainly not rich in material wealth. He's in humble circumstances, and James is instructing this one of humble circumstances to boast in his exaltation. Not that you should brag, but this is just a comparison between the one that is lowly and the one that is exalted, and he's turned that around. The rich are not the ones that are exalted. So when he says, listen, my beloved brothers, has not God chosen those who are poor in the world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he has promised to those who love him? And when you look at chapter 2, this is a theme that James is continuing, that things are not always the way that they seem. The Christian can rejoice and take comfort in times of suffering, because, you know, his hope is not bound in material things, and you don't place your hope in those things. So there's a little bit of irony that's used here when James declares that the rich should boast in their humiliation. And so you see the comparison that he is making here. And I've heard people before say that this comparison between rich and poor could be that this is talking about spiritually rich and spiritually poor. But this does not seem that way to me, and you can hear arguments on both sides of that, but it seems that James is talking about the worldly rich, the ones in the world that trust on their riches, and not Christians who are faithful and are wealthy, but ones that are in the world and seem to have no issues, but they really do have issues because their trust is not where it needs to be. And part of this is that, verses 10 and 11, in verse 10, it says, "And the rich in his humiliation, because like a flower of the grass, he will pass away." If this was talking about, somebody that is a faithful Christian, I don't think that verbiage would be used. This is indicating that they're not going to make it, and that their circumstance is temporary. So, what I'm trying to say is that what James is telling the Christians is that you live in humble circumstances. You don't need to be ashamed of that. The rich are well off, and perhaps their wealth causes them to avoid some of the suffering and trials that you have to endure. But, spiritually, they're humiliated. And you don't look at the worldly rich and in a longing way and think, "Oh, they're so much better off than me." Unless you want to take part in the humiliation that they have, then you can go down that road of riches and wealth, but you're not better off spiritually because of that. The double-minded person whose loyalties are divided between God and riches has a problem. But James says that rich person is going to pass away like the flower of the grass. And so the rich person will pass away. The rich are engaged in their schedules, their activities, and neglecting God, and they are going to be brought low in judgment. And so verse 12 says, "Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love him." So James concludes his remarks in this section and basically is saying that the rich is not the answer. Those who look to worldly riches, that's not the answer. The answer is that you remain steadfast under trial. You prevail when you successfully go through trials. And so it returns back to its opening topic that we've seen throughout this part of the study, talking about trials. Be steadfast under trials. God has promised you that he's going to take care of you, and you need to ask wisdom so that you can successfully go through these. And when you do stand the test, what do you receive? Not receiving earthly riches, but you receive the crown of life. And so that's a promise from God. If you hold on to God as the anchor, then you're going to be successful. So you stood the test and went through the trials, and you were steadfast, and you received the right results. I know it's very difficult for us to look around one of the things that I've done quite a bit with my job is if Siri takes me on a wild goose chase, through neighborhoods. Sometimes I find myself driving through a neighborhood that is much more expensive than what I could ever afford. And that's happened a lot in Nashville when I'm driving around. There's some really beautiful houses up there. And you know what pops in your mind when you drive by these houses? I bet that guy's not working for Konica Minolta. what is it that he does? You wonder, how is it that I wonder if they were born with money. I wonder if they were left a lot of money from their parents. Or, what kind of job is it that this person has to have this property that has the gate around it? And so you think about those things. But you can't really dwell on those things. It makes yourself miserable. And James is saying, the grass is not greener on the other side. It's better to be the lowly and of humble circumstances now and be exalted later than be exalted now and humiliated later. And sometimes people can have the riches now and they can have the riches later. But Jesus warned us he warned his disciples that that's very hard to do because the rich tend to depend on themselves. But the spiritual application that James is making is don't worry about what the rich guy's doing. You go through your trials, you be steadfast, and God has promised you a reward for your endurance that's going to be better than the temporary exaltation that the rich gets in this life. But as we said before, James is a very, very practical book, and I look forward to going through the rest of it with you and gaining even more practical lessons as we go along. So I hope this will be useful to you. If we can help you in any way tonight to respond to the invitation, we'd invite you to come while we stand and sing.